At least.
Just let me quickly add, this crisis is, you got to learn to use a crisis like this. Mm-hmm. And it gives us a chance to really rationalize what we're doing. And I'll go on a couple of areas, because Dennis and Peter covered some that I would want to touch. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to seriously look at our transportation system. You do not need to own the transport board as presently configured to have a functioning, efficient transport system. I would say that until, okay? And we need, the transport authority needs to have teeth. You set up a transport authority and basically it's like having a man who has the inability to, who's basically impotent. It's really ridiculous. The transport authority has no teeth. They really don't, and therefore we need to get that right, where we incorporate the ZRs and minibuses into the system, so it becomes a system, and stop the favoritism that's going on. And then the limited transport buses, transport board buses that we have, they have a specific job to do, because we cannot continue in that way. That's one. Two, it is good to see what's going to be happening at CBC. Because quite frankly, and anybody, the average householder who's savvy enough would know that satellite, you know, there's multi-choice system. Multi-choice system is a relic. You know,
I mean, stenographer clerk.
Yeah, it has to go, because you can, as long as you have Netflix, and there are other things that are similar to Netflix that are around and that will continue to grow. So that really and truly, the whole idea of multi-choice, right now it's still making a few dollars, but really within 2 to 5 years at the most, it is dead. So you have to, and why speak on multi-choice, because that is the major revenue earner for CBC. But the reality is that you have got to look at that service, you have got to look at the government information service, and you have got to see where you can pull those together and make them happen. And it's ridiculous. We continue to throw good money all the time into this hole. It got to stop. And those are two. And I can go on. I mean, rationalization in agriculture that's needed. I mean, that's really needed. And we can go right through the different sectors. And you can see the need for, the greater need for, amalgamating services and whatnot. So we cannot afford to waste this crisis. So I think this is, to my mind, the quote-unquote good thing that can come out of this whole thing, where we start to think about how we're going to get things done much more efficiently. And the last point, which basically goes back to Peter's point here about emigration. Mm-hmm. People only go someplace where they feel comfortable and where they feel they can make a living. We need to have productive people here in Barbados, that grow our population, to increase the amount of people we have to consume, increase the amount of people we can sell to, and most important, increase the amount of people who can pay national insurance and help us keep our standard of living going the way it is.
Yes, Glenn.
Right. Can I come in here?
Right. One of the things I want you to touch on, I don't think Peter or Sanka touched on it enough for me, and that is the hardship expected, some of the things people can look for and start to prepare themselves for.
That's what I would like to deal with, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Okay. I agree wholeheartedly with Dennis that the public in general has not been fully enough prepared as to what to expect under austerity for various reasons. I said several weeks ago when the first came on air and into being, that what I was hearing was a repetition of campaigning slogans. Many hands make light work, and we are all together. We are sharing the burden. Nice, lofty, romantic words, but that did not translate into reality for people's lives. And I felt there was a need to give you more explicit, day-to-day, practical of what they can expect. And therefore, that's why I'd like to draw your attention what has happened now at the Barbados Water Authority. The chairman has exposed that they had said earlier that they have expenditure every month for $20 million, and their average revenue per month is $10 million. The chairman has said yesterday or Friday that now, as a result of the new water tax, which again, when you're talking about fully expensive,
garbage and sewage contribution.
Well, as I've had to say earlier, it's not a tax, it's a contribution. Anyhow.
No, I'm just saying that, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm only saying that because the reality is it's not a new water tax.
But that's what the public perceives it and describes it. But the point I'm saying, she said that the revenue has now fallen $6 million per month.
40%,
People are refusing to pay any tax at all. Some people are going to raise. So therefore, I'm saying that if that means going to have an impact on the revenue that the Barbados Authority is expecting to generate, because it's no longer being subsidized by government to make its operations, which will have implications for the sewage project, etc. And therefore, that is where people are expressing their dissatisfaction, their unhappiness with certain measures to let them know that they are not happy about it.
And I agree with you, Glenn. I think you are really spot on there. And again, you see, and I remember you making that initial point that there should be more a greater level of discussion. The thing about it is that you cannot expect, the government cannot expect people to just go along with this without first really talking, really having that conversation with the public and let them understand the importance of whatever measure you're putting in place. So I agree with you totally there, totally.
They have to be led into this program.
Yes.
The way they were led into voting for the government on May the 24th. They have to persuade...
And I want to point out
that Jamaica... I agree with you totally.
Jamaica underscores the success of their program by doing that. Jamaica did it.
Pardon?
I said, and Jamaica underscored one of the major planks of the success of their program is doing that. They had over 1,200 consultations in various communities and so on, in terms of getting buy-in and various things like that. They underscored getting the buy-in of the public as one of the major reasons for the success of the successful part of their program.
Yes.
And the way that people function in societies were, the dynamics which would operate leading to the tremendous victory on May the 30 plus, the society has changed since then. You know, it's not the same society. People are not engaged for the same reason. So you cannot assume that same goodwill, that support is automatically going to be transferred to this program. Mm-hmm. No, it's a different set of features. People were operating like sanctuary on a highly emotive level where a lot of political decisions are made.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is really, the rubber hits the road, this is reality time. The impact on people's lives in various ways can be negative and injurious to their standard of living, etc. And therefore you have to have a fresh approach.
True.
A concerted, fresh approach.
I support you there 100%, Glenn. I agree with you totally, Glenn.
Some free good advice, Glenn. Let's go to the lines, though. I think we got the callers all back. So let's talk to some of the people out there listening to the program. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air. Good afternoon, Brastat Sunday. Yes, please. You're on the air.
You're there. Come here, please.
No, we don't have that person. Let's try again. Be close to your lines. We're going fast. Brastat Sunday, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes, let's not waste the austerity thing, as you say. Because really and truly, what the public should be aware of is the kind of costs that affect the government. I'm not talking about transfers. I'm talking about the various ways in which government spends money, like contracts. You know, the Miss Molly administration.
No, what are you talking about, man? I mean, boy, man. No.
Hello? Am I on or?
Yeah, you're on. Just
we're
a little distraction in back.
Rapt attention.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So here's the thing, right? You're sending people home from the bottom, which I completely am opposed to, of course. But the thing is that you're saying, no, you need to have, let's say, for argument's sake, this whole anti-corruption legislation to be designed and researched and this kind of thing, whether it's necessary or not is another matter. But to do that, you would engage the services of lawyers, of course, and then we'll probably have a travel over the world to South Africa and then back to Jamaica, don't get Trinidad and compare, which I think is a load of nonsense, to be honest with you. Just adopt somebody else's legislation and move forward. But you find that there are ways in which people are making money off of administrations that need to be properly exposed. How much money is spent, for argument's sake, by the government of Barbados in renting facilities that are unnecessary? They pay landlords millions of dollars per month. This needs to be recorded so the public will know, you know, something. Perhaps these are areas that we could cut back in before we start sending people home. How much money? We know about the contracts from the Barbados Water Authority, you know, came up with Mr. Abrams last week. You talk about millions of dollars. He had another set with another law company, which I can't mention. More than one law company over the past couple of weeks that were mentioned, taking millions of dollars off the government of Barbados. These are contracts that cost millions of dollars to private people in Barbados that need to be exposed. How much money is spent for consultancies on a yearly basis by governments. Because let me make no mistake about it. A lot of people get involved with political parties because of the ways that they can make money. All right, they ain't there to make to do good. They're there to make money. So if it were exposed to the public how it is and the various opportunities for these people to make that kind of money and the amount that they do make, then perhaps people will say, why are you sending the people home? Huh? Why not tackle those areas first, keep people employed, and perhaps you can find other ways to probably better entertain the fact that government employs a lot of people.
Fair enough. That point is a point that must be taken under consideration. Let's try some other calls because we're heading to the you're on the home stretch, actually. Brass that Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
You kept asking the question this morning. Mm-hmm. How did we get here?
I didn't ask that question once, but it was asked nonetheless.
We got here within the last few years. The truth is, we were here from creation. We were here from the time we operated the cash basis. And I came frontal to this in 1986 when I served on the sanitation board and recognized that they prepared budgets. And apparently this is something that all statutory boards were doing. In other words, you would prepare a budget and you will have a deficit. But the next year when you are doing your budget again, you do not include for the deficit that you had left. Do you have accumulated a deficit again? You do not include that. So because of the gas basis, we were building up deficits that
But Mr. Cameron, when people ask how we got here, including former Prime Minister Sir Lloyd, I don't think they're talking about the thing that you talked about in terms of accrual versus cash, in terms of showing the debt in a different way. I think they're talking
But you see, Corey,
yes,
don't
please.
Rush into this because you've stumped your toe.
Mm-hmm. I walk in, I'm thinking.
No,
I'm using my brain.
But please listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Please listen to me.
I heard the thing that you spoke about, and I'm not trying to throw you off track. What I'm trying to say is when people ask that question specifically, they are talking about a lot of things that have allegedly gone on over the last decade or so. I don't think they're talking about... But no, I have a lot of people here sending me messages, and when they're talking about, they're talking about under the last administration. They're not talking about just debt that we had from 19 or long when Adam was at primary school. They're talking about recent occurrences.
You need to speak to Sankar on this particular issue because he has a better understanding. Anyhow, let me finish.
He's left the room.
Yeah, he left.
He left, and vice versa, he left.
He'll be back soon, probably.
I'm making this point because I'm going to bring you to 2004. But before I get to 2004, I had to lay the basis for you. In the government service, there were many expenditures that were never brought to books for many years. In 2004, speaking in the appropriation bill, Prime Minister Arthur made the point, and you could go and research it, because this is not something pulling out of a hat. Ms. Prime Minister Arthur said that in the next three to four years, the next Minister of Finance will not be as fortunate as I was, or as I am, because that person will have to deal with the accrual system, whereas I am dealing with the cash basis. That is, if I'm given $10, I can only report the $10, even though I might have spent more or incurred more. But the next Minister of Finance will have to report what he is given, what was owed, and what has been incurred. So in 2008-2009, when people saw the deficit, and that is why you would have heard me making the point that we need to get rid of deficit financing and going to profit and loss.
Well, look, Sanka is back. Mr. Kam actually wanted to ask you or help you to help explain something. So he's back. I'll let him jump in now, and we'll see if we can move this along.
So basically, it's all about the accrual system, and that is responsible for all of our woes that we're discussing here today. And you're supposed to agree with that.
No, Peter, please don't speak words for me. What I was saying.
Yeah, but we ain't got a lot of time, so I'm just helping the process along by explaining to Sanko what you said.
Agenda, and I about no agenda.
You still with that agenda talk? I thought you were going to grow tired of that, I know.
No, but you can't help it.
I genuinely wanted the Sangha to help explain because I didn't understand. I thought that when people asked how we got here, they were talking of a more recent occurrence than what happened from the time the colonial powers handed over to us. That is my understanding of it.
You will have to hear what I said first. You see, and that's
the paraphrased it.
But go ahead.
Right. So Sangha, we're here because of the cash accrual switchover system, basically.
I've heard Mr. Kelvin on this 4 or 5 times. I must admit that I have a fundamental problem with his insistence on talking about it from the perspective that of trying to explain what occurred.
Sangha, I don't want you to go by what I said.
What?
I would like you to go to the Appropriation Bill of 2004 and read what Mr. Arthur, the Prime Minister at the time, said. And what he said that will be the effect within the next 3 to 4 years when it is introduced. Because if you do, and I know you're a
consultant. Yes, and I know what was said about that as well. Mr. Kelman, there were challenges and there have been challenges with the whole system that was. The point about it is that is just one of the reasons why we are here. Okay? That is just but at the same time, one of the real reasons, and I didn't want to deal with this, but if you want to go there, I will go there with you. One of the reasons that we are here with this is because of incompetent management by the last government. That is it, as far as I am concerned. And the facts are there to support it. But as I said, I do not want to go there because at the end of the day, I don't want to go there for the simple reason.
Well, are you saying that is the only reason and we need to ignore the difference between the cash basis and the accrual basis?
All right, what are we going to do? Mr. Kelman, he has a better understanding.
That was one of the reasons why we are where we are. But the major reason is for the way the policies of the last government, the way how we managed Barbados over the last few years.
All right, so let me help you. Mr. Cameron, I'm going to help you. Mr. Cameron, I'm going to help you. I'm going to press the bell and let you get off at the next stop. Are we going to continue talking about austerity and the future? Because that is a whole different discussion that's going to take us down a whole different line. I understand the cash accrual changeover, but I don't think that is what we're discussing here today. Brass, that's Sunday. Good afternoon.
Is that me, Corey?
Yes, please. Highly technical man at a highly difficult time. I don't know how we can manage this one because you're usually very technical.
Easy peasy.
Let me go.
I actually sat down and took so many notes, but I had discarded a whole lot of them because the truth of the fact is, you want to talk about austerity. Austerity is a macro phenomenon, not a micro phenomenon. All right, and unfortunately, we have been going down the line for the whole program on micro issues.
Yeah,
sadly
agreed.
Enough, or as important as they are, micro issues don't inform the macro economy. All right, so you can't actually deal with a macro discussion through a micro lens, as important as they are. But before I go off on that, I want to say just 2 things, if you will allow me, 2 asides. Something Dennis said, and I want to agree 100%, but to summarize it, we have to build out productive capacity. Forget about productivity now. We got to build out productive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
We can get as many loans as we want. If those loans are only going to shore up balance of payments and not bleed down into the real economy and give us the capacity to pay back those loans and to grow the economy, we will be here in the next 10 years.
True.
That's an aside, though, right? Mm-hmm. The second aside is a much, much lighter one. Earlier on, somebody mentioned El Barro and Army of Occupation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hear that come up a lot. But there's something that we tend to miss on it. El Barro was a proponent of the employer of last resort type of program, which these days is called a job guarantee. You're going to hear a lot about it now from Kirsten Gillibrand and them in the States. Right? So when we hear about him saying Army of Occupation, you've got to stop and think, what did he really mean? We put it out in a derogatory type of way, but Arabara was a proponent of the employer of last resort.
But he used it in a derogatory term.
Yeah, I read the whole speech. You got to put it in context.
Constitutional debate, and people were not approving some emergency proposals.
But Grant, you know how Errol Barr was. You know how he would use terms and phrases.
Because I was there for the debate.
But Colin, I don't think you should try to rewrite history. The speech is there to be read. In his book of speeches.
No doubt he used it in that way, Grant. That's all I'm saying. No doubt. I'm not arguing that point. But what I'm suggesting is he was a proponent of employer last resort. So you got to put that in mind when hearing what he said.
The first thing he did when he became premier was to have a crash program. Remember that?
Yeah. So I just want to put that on another side. I didn't really want to go there at all. But just as an aside, right? Where I really want to go is this place, because we keep talking about where we are now and what have you. And I don't deal with, as I guess all y'all know, I don't deal with the party politics of it all, because I'm not interested in party politics. Politics, yes, from the true perspective of politics, meaning governance. Mm-hmm. But not interested in party politics. But a little, what Chris says, we'll call a thing one.
Hello?
Caller? Have you seen the loss that caller? Let's
just drop up.
Some technical. All right, let's try to get in with one or two more callers because we really, really heading home. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon.
No, Corey, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And
yeah,
you?
Corey, there's two things I want, David.
Right, go quickly.
R30.
Good, that's the topic.
Peter Wickham talk about people in public service being able to get things from the bosses to go finish secondary tertiary as well as university education. But it appears to me that on one hand it's good, on the other hand it's bad, whereas the private sector don't do it. But yet, when they try to stop people, they're not stop, say that they're not paying for university education, though. It was a big hullabaloo. It's okay on one hand, but if you have to pay for it from the government and letting civil servants go to UE, which he criticized just now, but now he's saying now that it should pay for it. That is one. Two.
I'm confused.
But I'm confused too, because he was saying that the government should pay for the people at university, but yet he criticized when the people from public service was able to go to university, because he then turned around and said it was a cost. All is cost. Good. Two, Corey.
Sir.
I want you to tell me if it is true or not. Is it true that you, along with four other people, is getting a job in government at the value of $36,000 a month?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
So you can't confirm it, you can't do that, but you got a job in government.
No,
I heard a bigger figure.
I see some rumors going around. I trying to put a two in front that six. Uh-huh. No one has written to me or explained anything to me. I've not discussed any terms and conditions with anybody, so I can't sit here on public radio or anywhere else and confirm anything.
That you're working with government.
Exactly.
Another thing.
I work with Starcom.
And the ranch, of course.
Yeah. Definitely.
Good. A lot of people were appointed in 2007, and 2007 was under this administration. And those people, if you check the history, saying people that went home, those people that were appointed in 2007 came in after saying people that gone home now. Cause I did a check, because I don't come on this program, Nitty, really. And I can tell you that. So if the people that were not appointed in 2007, when the rest were appointed in 2007 that came after people in 2007, they were had a bit, because people don't understand. So long as you are appointed, there's no appraisals in government. Appraisals is only done on temporary workers. And that is the problem.
That's true, Glenn?
No, that's not the way it's intended to be.
I'm talking about the past, I'm talking about the present. You
are saying that's not the way it was intended to be. I don't know what's happening now.
But
that was not the program.
Glenn, no appointed person does get appraisals.
So here with continuous assessment. That's only on temporary.
Anyhow,
you check it out. Everything I learn, you check it out.
All right.
Anyhow, caller, land the plane, please. It's 12 minutes after
the
one.
Mm-hmm. 10 years, so I know we gonna be back here again because you had to get rid of these people. Cause don't forget, you got 30 politicians of one party.
But you saying that with excitement, but I believe that all Barbadians should wish that we are not back here, and we should start to talk about things for the government, our governance system, to make sure that we are not back here 10, 20, or even 50 years from now. But a good point to end on. The music is telling us it's time to wrap up what has been an interesting Brass Tack Sunday. Woo! Thank you very much, Sanka Price, Peter Wickham, Dennis Johnson, and of course, Glenn Murray for joining us on the moderators panel as we look at the austerity and the way forward. I don't think it needs to be said, but I think that one of the things we're building in is when we come together and discuss some issues, and I would only wish that this we continue to every once in a while come together and look at the issues. I'm Corey Lane, I've been your host and moderator, and I implore you to continue to listen to Voice of Barbados, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.